We'll say we have direct experience. They say that we have direct. Therefore, we don't bank everything on direct experience. We're giving importance to Shastric direction. Your experience is not evidence. Your experience is good. You're having experience, so I'm happy for you. But your experience is not evidence of anything for me. Evidence is Shastra. Okay. Experience can be misleading. You know, people that take LSD and they realize that they're God. Somebody said that realization, that God consciousness and intoxication don't go together. So one witty lady in America, she said, well, no, three drinks and I think I'm St. Francis of Assisi. So experience can be unreliable. Shastra is reliable. Okay. Mayatatamidam sarvam jagaravyaktamurtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvabhastataha. Now Krishna is going to explain something about the relationship between himself and this material world. This is generally a great question in theology. What is the nature of God and what is the nature of God's relationship to the world? It's a basic theological question. Sometimes it's expressed as, is God immanent or transcendent? Transcendent means, you know, beyond everything. And immanent means, is he within everything? Like the nature people, they're trying to realize God as, even they sometimes get quite sophisticated in constructing their theological views that God is everywhere and God is in everything and everything is, you know, there's no difference between the tree and God, and because God is in the tree and God is, you know, everywhere in nature, God is there. So they get a God who's very much in the world in terms of the things of this world, but he's not transcendent. He's here, you know. He's not, God is not like a man sitting on a throne. God is there in the tree. God is there in the flower. God is there in the sky. God is there in the, you know, right? You get this God who's right there with you, but he's not beyond. Or alternatively, you get this God who's, no, God's not here in this material world. God has his own kingdom far, far beyond this material world. When you go to heaven, then you'll meet God. God doesn't waste his time down here. So they get a very transcendent God who's so transcendent that he's not connected very much with what's going on here. So is God immanent or transcendent? What's the nature, what's the relationship between God and the world? Wow, he's got his own Sudarshan chakra. This is very impressive. Did you see that? Never know who's going to be sitting in your class. Well, so here Krishna addresses this question. And he says, Mayatadam tatam idam sarvam. I pervade idam sarvam. What is that? Ishavasyam idam sarvam. All this means the material world, the whole creation. Maya, by me, tatam idam sarvam. This whole world is pervaded. But avyaktamurtina, in my unmanifested form, you don't see me. I'm there every place, but you don't see me. Matsthani sarvabhutan, everything's within me. Nachaham teshu avastata, but I'm not within everything. A little mysterious. It's all within me, but I'm not within them. I'm transcendent then. But wait, I pervade everything. It seems that he's both. And Prabhupada explains that one can understand this only by devotional service. You get another free Sanskrit quote here that you wouldn't find back in the old edition, the Tasri Krishna Namadi. Prabhupada explains that Sevan Mukhihi Jivado, by being engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance, you can see Krishna. He's all pervading, but he's not conceivable by the material senses. Avyakta Murtina. We can't see him, but he's everywhere. And Prabhupada gives the example of a government or a business where the government is present everywhere through its different departments, through its different departments, but you don't see it. The government is there, the roads, the traffic is all working under the government control. So many things are happening because the government, the water is being controlled by the government, so many things, but you don't see it. Or Prabhupada gave in a business, the proprietor is there in every department, but you don't see him there. He's not personally there, but he's there by his energies, by his arrangement. Paramatma is also, he has his, what is the function of Paramatma? He's both. The Paramatma is not doing everything. What's he doing?
Overseeing.
Upadreshta and Anumanta. He's allowing. He's sitting and he's allowing. But yeah, he's everywhere as the Paramatma. He's everywhere by his, because that Paramatma is unmanifested, you don't see him. So he's everywhere by the Brahman effulgence. Actually, the Brahma Jyoti is everywhere. It's just covered by, from our vision, by Maya. He's everywhere by his material energy, not different from him. He's everywhere. The spirit souls are not different from him as spiritual energy. Everything, he's everywhere, but he's not seen. Something else about that? No. That's another point. Even if Paramatma is everywhere, Krishna is still Goloka Eva Niva Sati. Akilatma Bhuto. He's everywhere, but he's never lived Paramekam Nagachati, never leaves Vrindavan. That's Krishna. If you can't be everywhere to begin with, but if you'd be everywhere, where would you be? But Krishna is everywhere and still he never leaves home. He's immanent as Paramatma, he's transcendent as Krishna. Or he's immanent through his different energies also, as transcendent as Krishna. Vishtabhya, Prabhupada quotes, Vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam. He's everywhere by his diffusion of energies. That's also an extra quote, by the way. You didn't get that in the previous edition, I think. Yeah. So much left out. Now Krishna's going to go on and explain more. Nacha matstani bhutani pashyame yogamaisharam. What's pashya mean? Just see. Pashyame yogamaisharam. Just see my inconceivable mystic power. Nacha matstani bhuti. Everything's resting on me. No, everything's not resting on me. Bhuta brit I'm the maintainer of the cosmic manifestation, or of all the living entities. Take Bhuta can mean either one. Nacha Bhutasto, but I'm not situated here. Mamatma Bhuta Bhavana. I'm the source of everything. Everything's resting on me. I'm maintaining everything. And still, I'm not part of all this. I'm beyond all this. This is Krishna's inconceivable nature. Goloka eva nivasati akhilatma bhuto. He's everywhere, and still he never leaves Vrindavan. Now Krishna is going to give an example. Yata kasha stito nityam vayu sarvatra go mahan tata sarvani bhutani matstani tu upadharaya. Yes. Plenty of other places Prabhupada does cite these verses in reference to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Achincha Bheda Abhed, but not in the Gita. The sages have their prerogatives. So now Krishna is giving an example that in the sky, the wind is always blowing. And yet, the sky is always beyond the wind. The sky is always beyond the wind. Although the wind is within the sky. The sky is apart from the wind, really. The word here is akash, the ether. You can say akash means ether or sky. Prabhupada gave either of those translations, typically ether, or often he would say sky, akash. It's always there, and situated in the sky is vayu, the wind. But the wind and the sky are separate. They're not really, the sky is always there, it doesn't really care. You know, the wind blows this way, you have a hurricane, you have absolutely still weather, you have easterly wind, westerly wind, whatever it may be, sky doesn't change. Sky doesn't even get involved. Sky's just there. And all this stuff is going on within the sky. But the sky is really transcendental to all of this. Even though without the sky, you can't have, the wind can't go anywhere. Where would the wind be without the sky? Ask the wind, without the sky, where would you be? Be nowhere. So there's this intimate connection between the sky and the wind, and yet the sky is beyond the wind. So Krishna is giving us this example to try to help us understand. Yeah, look at the sky. I mean, it's such a big thing. Even the wind, you know, it's like you go up past a certain altitude and the wind that you get down here isn't there. Yeah, the pilots, they say, okay, we've got a strong wind down here, turbulence. What is turbulence? Turbulent means turbulent winds. So he says, okay, we've got turbulence down here at 35,000 feet. We're going to go up to 37,000 feet, and I think we're going to be past this in just a couple of minutes. But in the meantime, we ask you to keep your feet, seatbelts fastened, if you will, like we do here in the cockpit, and thank you very much. Excuse me. Get a job, right? So he goes up 2,000 feet or something, and there's no wind anymore. He's still in the sky, but he's left the wind behind. It was just a couple thousand feet down, or it was connected with the clouds or something. Who knows? But you just move a little this way. You know, we're going to go a little bit. We're going to move about 20 miles to the east to avoid this turbulence, and I think we'll make up the time. Don't worry, we'll get you there, and maybe even a couple minutes ahead of time. It's there. The wind is there, but you just move a little bit, and it's not there. There's no turbulence. Everything's nice. You can sip your 7-Up again, and it's not going to rattle. So the wind is doing its business of blowing all around, but the sky is steady. The sky is unaffected. The sky is like that. Or the birds, they're flying around in the sky. But the sky, fly as you like, but I'm transcendental. Without me, you'll have no place to go. But I don't have to get involved in your flying business, which the big guys can fly higher, the small guys can fly lower, fine. So Krishna's like that. He's transcendental, and still he's everywhere. Very practical example. Editor had problems editing this. Although the sky, this is end of the purport, or wind or air is great, still it is situated within space. Space is not beyond the sky. Okay? Space is not beyond the sky. Okay? Hari Bol. You won't be assessed on that. It does say that. In fact, there's another quote you wouldn't have gotten. Gee. A couple more quotes. In fact, all of these quotes you wouldn't have gotten if you had the beloved edition that some people say is the only real one. You would have missed all these quotes. But yes, it says it's out of fear of the Supreme Lord. Ya bhisha bhata pavate. Bhisha. Yud, out of fear of him. Excuse me, in what context? I don't know the context, actually. Well, it's in the context of the Upanishads, so that's the context. But precisely what the context is, I'm not sure. There are similar statements. It's out of fear of him that the sun is moving. It's out of fear of him that... Yeah, but fear is, a big motivator. In Goloka Vrindavan, fear is not the big thing. Yashoda Mayi is not feeding fear, Krishna out of fear that, I'll be punished for my sinful activities if I don't feed this child. There may be fear, but it's not that kind of fear. Gopis are fearing that Krishna may leave, but they're not fearing that if I don't dance nicely, he's going to get angry and smite me or something. But on the platform of Aishwarya, where there's awe and reverence, there's a sense that I'd better do this because I'm working for somebody powerful. They have this in the Bible also, that one should fear God, and there are different takes on it. Sometimes it's said that you better watch out because he's got a big stick and he can really let you have it if you're not good. And then sometimes it's taken that fear means a sort of reverential feeling of being subservient and so on. Excuse me? Fear of God is the... Thank you, that's exactly the quotation. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. So it's the beginning. It's not the end of wisdom, but it's the beginning. First thing is, he's big, he's strong, he makes all the rules, he punishes you if you break them. You better be on your toes. We saw that people... even when you're serving the spiritual master, you're a little afraid, I might do something wrong. And you have experience, some of you, you're serving your spiritual master, you're a little, I don't want to commit an offense, I don't want to do something stupid. It's not, you know, exactly fear in the sense of the way you're afraid of people with guns, but it's a certain reverence that this person is so great and I'm so small and incapable that I might blow it. I might do something wrong. So there's this sense that I better really be, you know, I can't space out, I can't be have my mind over there while I'm doing this. I really have to focus. I really have to do this right. I really have to, you know, push myself or whatever it is and not screw up. So there's a kind of fear there. So that's part of a reverential relationship. Mm-hmm. And the demigods in charge of the various departments have that feature to their relationship, that I've got this post, but I better execute. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other question? Yes. Loud, loud. Oh, Goswamiji. Louder. That's a different thing. Fear in business or something. Even then, fear is sometimes good, you know, that I better not take on this competitor because he's too big. I can't do it. I better take some other corner where he's not busy and I can do something. Sometimes, you know, fear in business is also good. A person who's totally fearless is reckless. Fear has its place. To be afraid of a snake is not stupid if the snake is poisonous. If you're totally fearless, it's your... and if you're fearful all the time that, you know, you see a little tick-tick and you're afraid, well, that's another kind of... But to be... to have a certain fear of God is the beginning. God is very great. I better... toe the line. I should not perform. If you think about the beginning, sinful activities, you know, bad karma. He has the power to punish you. God will. But you even parents say, don't do that. God will punish you, right? So then the kid says, oh yeah. Or these days they don't care. You know, well, let him punish me. Because they don't have the beginning of wisdom. That he's big, he's powerful, he runs the show. You can't beat him. He can find you anywhere you go. He doesn't tolerate a whole lot of nonsense. He's pretty strict. So I better not do these sinful things. I better not do these sinful things or I'm going to get punished. That's the beginning of knowledge. Just like we read about Vaidhi Bhakti. Why do you do Vaidhi Bhakti? Because you're supposed to. Because the spiritual master says you have to. Because the scriptures say you have to. You have to get up for Mangalarti. You have to chant your 16 rounds. You have to follow these four regulative principles. So you do it because you have to. That's the beginning. And when you become advanced, I want to get up and see what the deities are wearing this morning. I want to do this, I want to do that. You become spontaneously eager to serve the deities. Then it's not a question of fear, it's a question of, well, a question of obligation, it's a question of, I want to do it. In the beginning, it's, oh my God, if I'm not there on time, they're going to write my name down in the book. If they write my name down in the book four times, then, and, you know, whatever happens. Yeah, the fear is the beginning. That if you don't do this, some consequence is going to befall you. That's the beginning. But in the advanced stage, there's love. In the beginning, there's fear. Little fear is sometimes helpful. Motivating. It's motivating. It gets you going. Yeah. But there's another, we were talking about the difference in realization. In some literature, practically the fear of God is the beginning of knowledge, and the fear of God is not too far from the end of knowledge. Yeah, they're fearful, and rightly so. There's Lord Nrisimhadeva, he's so angry. He's more advanced. He says to the Lord, I'm afraid of material existence. I'm not afraid of your fierce feature. So this is love. This is a feature of the Krishna consciousness movement. It doesn't stay on the platform of fear and threats and the Lord thy God is a jealous God, and you know, he's jealous and he's angry and he smites people. Here's a list of the people he's smitten, and you know, it gets pretty rough. You better be on your toes, unless you want to be turned to a pillar of salt, or you want to be, you know, all sorts of things can happen to you. You better be good. But in the advanced stages, it's out of love that one has love for God. And I'm not saying love for God is exclusive to the Hare Krishna movement. In every religious tradition, the goal, stated goal generally, not every, but in the theistic traditions, the goal is love for God. In Judaism, in Christianity, in Islam, love is supposed to be there. But the detail, the science of how to love God, and why God is deserving of love, the attractive feature, that you'll find, you won't find everywhere. Yes. Are they impersonal? That is something for them to consider. They sometimes think they are, and they sometimes may not think they are. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met the Pathans, who were basically Muslims, and convinced them from the Quran that God is personal. There's evidence in all of their scriptures that God is personal, but it's not always brought to the front. It's sometimes pushed to the back. Yeah, I don't want to get into all the, but yes, God is made, man is made in God's image. Well, if you're made in the image of God, God must look like something. So there's lots of evidence. You can get into why sometimes these religions take an impersonal direction. They have their own historical reasons why some of those traditions have gone more toward the impersonal side. But Prabhupada generally sees it as, again, this is the battle line, that Maya is always trying to distract us from the personality of Godhead by different impersonal conceptions. And our point is that God is a person. Whether you take any, you know, your Christianity, Hinduism, Judaism, this, that, if you actually understand the purport, you'll see that God is a person. That's our proposition. Yes. Loud. Joyfully performed. Yeah, therefore we're not putting a lot of emphasis on fear. We're giving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not in the fear dispensing business. He's Krishna Prema Pradayate. He's giving love for Krishna. But even in the, even when you're serving the spiritual master and there's some sense of fear there, there's also enjoyment. So in relationship with Krishna, actually in the relationship with Krishna, there's fear, there's ghastliness, there's, what else, what other, Yeah, there are all these things that are, there's separation, there are all these things which by material estimation are not very enjoyable. But in relationship to Krishna, They're supremely enjoyable. Supremely enjoyable. Okay, shall we move a little bit forward?
Yes.
Now Krishna is going to cover some territory that he's really covered in the eighth chapter, and he's going to do it again in a little bit different way. We read in the eighth chapter that bhutva, bhutva, praliyate, everything's coming out and being manifested and then being destroyed again, and we heard about the cycles, the whole day of Brahma and things coming in and out, and at the end of life, Brahma's life, everything is finally destroyed. New life, he comes out again. Everything comes out. So now Krishna is going to talk about that. Sarva bhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mahamikam kopakshaye punastani kopado visrajamyam. At the end of the millennium, the whole prakriti enters into Krishna in the form of the Lord Vishnu. And then with the next millennium, it comes out again. That means what's this millennium being described here? Mm-mm. Yeah, the end of the millennium means Brahma's death. When Brahma dies, then everything is unmanifest. For 4,300,000 times 2 times 12 times 30 times 100 years, everything's unmanifest. And then kalpado visrajamyaham. That's called what? Mahakalpa. The whole lifetime of Brahma. Any question about that? Okay, that's pretty straightforward. Prakritim svam avashtabhya visrajami puna punaha bhuta grama mimam kritsnam avasham prakritir bashat. The whole cosmic order is under me. By my will, it's automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. The Lord enters into the material nature as the Garbhadakshay Vishnu and creates everything within the universe. It's manifested from the Mahavishnu. The Lord enters it as the Garbhadakshay Vishnu, expands himself as the Kshirdakshay Vishnu, and then wraps it all up again, and then manifests it again. Prakritim avasham prakritir bashat. By the force of nature, avasham means? Huh? Without any control. Helpless. When you lose control of your car, you're helpless. Steering wheel's not working, you're trying in, but nothing's happening. You're helpless. Because you lost control. And vashat means under control. So under Krishna's control, the whole cosmic manifestation and all the living entities, they're helpless. They have to follow the order of Krishna. They have to follow the direction of Krishna's will. Avasham prakritir vashat. By the will of the Lord, the material nature is acting. Yes. And we're trying to change it. We're so foolish, we think that we can change the course of nature. It doesn't work that way. Nacham mam tani karmani nibhananti dhananjaya udasina vadasina masaktam teshu karma. So Krishna says, I'm doing all this, but it doesn't affect me. We do things and we're affected. We get tired. We get arrested. We get entangled. So many things happen when we work. But Krishna says, nachamam tani karmani nibhananti. I'm not affected by the things that I do. We do something and we're affected. sinful reactions, pious credit. Everything has some reaction. Krishna says, I'm not affected. Nibbidananti, I'm not bound by my work. We're bound. We do something and we're all bound by goodness, passion, ignorance. But Krishna says these modes, elsewhere he said that, these modes are working under my direction, but I'm not affected. Namam karmani limpanti, name karma pale spriha. And one who knows this isn't entangled either. Iti yo na vijana ti mam, what is that? Make karma place praha iti mam yo bijanati karma bir na sabhajate. Anyone who knows what to speak of Krishna being entangled, if you know that Krishna is not entangled, you won't be entangled. Because you'll be properly understanding Krishna. Janma karma chame divyam. Atmaramasyatasyasti prakritya nasamagamaha. It's another bonus quotation. He's always involved in his spiritual activities. He's not really doing anything in the material world. It's all being done by his energy. He's never stuck. Mayajyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Hetunanena konteya jagad viparivartate. Very important verse. Verse 10. Adyaksha means? Adyaksha? Supervision. An adyakshak is a supervisor. Aksha means? Aksha? Eyes. Aksha means eyes. So a person, so adyaksha means supervision. Supervision. Overseeing. So Krishna says, Maya adyakshena. Adyakshena means instrumental. By my supervision, this prakriti is working. Suyate. Sacharachara. Manifesting the moving and the non-moving entities. Hetuna anena. Because of this reason, jagat viparivartate, the cosmic manifestation is working. Later we'll find asatyam apratishtam te jagadahuranishwaram. The demons say, oh, everything's just working on its own. As a nature, they've ascribed independent intelligence to nature. Nature is so intelligent that she does this and does that, right? That nature has native intelligence. Well, where did it come from? No, nature just has it. Ultimately, everything has no cause. Everything just is. There's so many demonic ideas. Asatyam, or everything just isn't. It's not even, it's not real. It's just an illusion. So you can enjoy it. Jagadahur Anishuram. They say that the Jagat, the universe, has no controller, Anishura. Aparaspara sambhuta kimanyat kama hoitukam. What other hetu hoitukam? What other hetu, what other cause is there? But from Bhagavad Gita, everything is cause and effect. It doesn't just stop someplace along the line. It goes all the way back to the original cause, sarvakarana karanam. That's Krishna. The scientists, you know, they're weird sometimes. Like there's a scientific theory. Oh, what's that one? I've forgotten what Greek name they gave it to it. The mystery is, why is there life on Earth? How did life arise on Earth? And so one big scientist, Nobel Prize winning scientist, I think from Sri Lanka, he came out with a theory that actually what happened is that life came in spores from other planets. That these spores, under certain circumstances, were carried by whatever mechanism, and that's how life started on Earth. So you don't have to figure out how all these chemicals cooked up life. It came from other planets or other parts of the universe. That explains it. And, of course, you have to ask, well, where the hell did they come from? You know, that's the any intelligent person. Well, okay, but where did that come from? All right, but where did that come from? Then you come to Krishna. Then they say, well, where did he come from? But his nature is he's the cause of everything. He's the cause of all causes. Yes. There's so many big theories. Big bang, little bang, middle bang. But where did the bang come from? Where do the ingredients come from for the bang? Where did the electric power come? You know, where does it all come from? Who supplied the ingredients? Who supplied the energy? Where does that stuff, how does it show up on the scene? Unless you answer that question, you haven't answered the question. Well, not just to gain acceptance, they believe it. Yeah, God made the soup and Darwin stirred it, right. And, you know, some yes, some no. There are those who've very much compromised or very much bought into these theories. And it's actually very interesting that when you get into deep science, there are issues at stake. It's not just figuring out how things work and all of that, but there are existential issues at stake. They're not just playing a game of how can we make a better refrigerator. But there are deep issues about the nature of reality that are at stake here. And Arsada Puddha Prabhu was very conscious of that and very much on topic with that. And Srila Prabhupada was very much on topic with that, identifying material science as a frontline exponent of materialism. Apart from their experiments for, you know, how do we make this do this, how do we make that do that, there are certain philosophical assumptions, certain existential assumptions or agendas that are involved here. And it's historical. You can find out through different historical periods what agendas have influenced the course of science or the course of civilization in the role of science. So many things are there. And when especially top-level scientists in physics and so on are talking about their theories, it's not just mechanical questions. And they know it's not just mechanical questions. They're dealing with really fundamental issues, which in one sense are theological. To say that there's nothing beyond matter is a theological statement, as much as saying that there's something beyond matter is a theological statement. To say that this tree is here or to say that there's no tree are equally statements about the tree. So to say that there's God or to say that there's no God, or to say that there's a need for God or to say there's no need for God, these are theological statements. So science is very much concerned with theological issues, as much as it says we have no business with theology. We're interested in science here. But you didn't see a big bang. So now you're dealing with epistemology, which is part of theological study. How do we know things? That's epistemology. How do we know? What's our source of knowledge? Well, okay. We say scripture, you say experiment. Well, how do we decide who's right? Well, in science, not if you don't go by experiment and other, then it's not science. Okay, but that doesn't mean it's not truth. You know, if it's not science, it's not truth. That's really what you're saying. If it's not our scientific method, it's not true. We don't accept that. Your scientific method is so often wrong. And there's so many things that your scientific method can't accommodate. It can't get there. Science, you know, what can science... Achinchakalu, ye bhava, nayam sarkena yojiye. How can you argue about that which is beyond argument? That which is inconceivable, how can you conceptualize? How can you make statements about that which is beyond perception? What experiment will enable you to perceive that which is beyond perception? So there are major, major theological, philosophical issues at stake in even in high school biology, in high school physics, if there's physics in high school, whatever there is, all these disciplines, geology, you know, it's a battleground out there in the schools. When they're teaching geology, they're not just teaching how volcanoes work. I know I have a friend, one of my sister's friends, wrote a little basic geology book for kids, a beautiful, beautifully illustrated geology book, which is narrated by the Earth. And the Earth says, and then I decided it would really be great to do this. And then I decided it would really be great to do that. And then the most amazing thing happened. I began expanding. And, you know, it's so interesting. And, you know, but what is it about? There's a narrative there. In fact, she told me there's a narrative there that she said that essentially it's a myth, which she meant in a very respectable sense, that it's a story of... that enables us to reach a deeper understanding. But it's also, you know, from her point of view, well, you can have this myth, you can have that myth, take any myth you want. They're all equally false. I'm not quite stating her case accurately. But, you know, essentially, well, you know, I've got this myth, which, okay, let's say it's not mythology. What she means is it's a formulation of what reality is like. And my formulation is backed by big, big scientists. And I'm telling it in an exciting way for children. That's geology. You know, so when you send your kid to grade school to learn geology, he's not only learning how volcanoes work, he's learning that really nature works on its own. With no supervision necessary. Nature has its own intelligence. And Krishna says, no, you know, take all the rocks all the wood in this little yard and wait till it builds a house. It's not that smart. It doesn't do anything without supervision. You don't get this, you know, and then there, even in biology, there's huge issues. But Darwin says the eye, you know, I'm confounded by the eye, how this complex thing could come into existence, because it's useless until you get all the parts. And how you get, what's the survival value of the individual parts until they're all working? You have huge theoretical issues in evolutionary theory or in evolutionary science. Problems, not issues, serious problems. Darwin himself recognized serious, serious problems. They can be expressed mathematically, they can be expressed in physics, they can be expressed in so many different ways, but they're problems. And Krishna gives the ultimate reason why they're problems. He said, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't happen on its own. There's a book called Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science by Sariputta Prabhu, which really deals very well with some of these fundamental issues in science. I can recommend that. It's available from Krishna.com. You might find it elsewhere, Amazon.com. You can get it. And those who are in the West. Wonderful book. It really gets onto this thing. Is it all happening mechanistically? That nature is just a machine that works on its own? Or, as Prabhupada said, that any machine, somebody has to drive the machine. If it's a car, someone has to turn the ignition. If it's a computer, somebody has to press the start button. There has to be intelligence, otherwise things, machines don't work. These tractors around here do not independently go out and plow the fields. So Krishna says, I'm the source of the activity of the whole universe. It's because of me. I'm the cause of everything. Any question about that? Since we're out of time? Yes? Without knowing? Yeah. Always? Yeah, changing their minds, changing their theories. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. These theories are very much agenda-driven in terms of, or we can see them as being very much agenda-driven in terms of theological commitments. You know, there's no God, there's no need of God. The idea of a soul is absurd, da 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 da. Aggressively, what does Krishna say? Maya pratigana. Their knowledge is stolen by illusion. They don't want to surrender to Krishna. And what will they be busy in? Kshayaya jagato hita. Nasty activities meant for destruction. Now, that's not every scientist. I don't want to paint every scientist with this same brush. There are very pious scientists out there. There are scientists who are really in a collegial relationship with us on these issues. They're as outraged as we are at these anti-theological stances. There are scientists who are neutral. But there's an enormous force behind a materialistic, mechanistic, reductionistic approach to science. It's really the dominant view in science, unknown to ordinary people who just aren't aware of the issue. For them, science is just the thing that gives them, you know, a faster chip every 6 months. It's the thing that makes all these gadgets possible. It's the thing that does this and that and the other thing that lets us know what it does, all these wonderful things. But what these bedrock issues are in terms of the direction, and it affects the whole direction of civilization. If the world, if there's no God in control, if there's no soul, the world is a very different place from if there's a God in control, if there is a soul. How we live will be completely different. There's a soul within the body of the unborn child. There's no soul. It makes a difference. And it's literally a life and death difference. So these issues are there in science, and Srila Prabhupada was really perceptive, really focused on seeing that here was an important battleground, and therefore he established this Bhaktivedanta Institute. At one point he said, you know, however much money you want, he really wanted to get on this case, that the modern scientists who are essentially preaching godlessness should be challenged scientifically, you know, on their own terms, challenge them. With background knowledge from Bhagavad Gita, from Srimad Bhagavatam, challenge them. Any simple common sense thing, Prabhupada would say, you know, if I give you yellow and white, can you make a chicken? You know, tell me, give me a list of the chemicals you want. I'll give them. Can you make life? So in this way. All right. Time being up, we shall stop. And do I see you again next week? Is that what happens? Same gang, same place, same everything? All right. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Glorious to Srila Prabhupada.
Small announcement.
Small announcement.
Since we're speaking of science.